Well, that's Phyllis Paul, and he's playing him because he's, I believe he's in town tonight. He's at the Wild Auditorium at the University of Hartford, which is a nice little place to see a musical act. And Ellis Paul's a terrific musician. We use his stuff a lot here on our show. And we got some fun stuff ahead, and well, I don't even know why I say that. But
it's because it's
easily become fun.
Well, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
We got a bunch of crap lined up.
We're going to grind through a lot of fairly tedious crap.
That probably wouldn't keep people listening very much. So
probably not.
That's why we have a great, interesting, fantastic show coming up for you.
Well,
by the way, can I just mention one thing to you? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Remember yesterday when everybody was running around here cleaning like crazy people?
Yeah.
You know who cleans Sal Haney's office?
Who?
His wife and kids came in from home with cleaning stuff. They brought in their own cleaning stuff and cleaned his office.
Ooh. I don't even know what to make of that.
Well, I'd say, you know, it sounds to me like he's got a great wife, number one. But I mean,
probably the way he's around the house, too. But he probably doesn't lift a finger.
I wouldn't think. But I just thought that was interesting. And I verified it with him.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll have comments about that later, I guess. I don't even know what to think about it.
I mean, it is a lot to hit you all at once.
The fact that he's unable to perform janitorial services does not augur well for his future. It's actually sort of something he should probably, you know, work on a little bit, just in case those whole broadcasting executive thing
doesn't work out.
Works out about the way we think it's going to work out for him. Yeah, he might want to, you know.
He's also in the next room now.
I understand that. He might want to,
just watch it.
He might want to sharpen his stain removal skills a little bit. Anyway, I don't even know what's probably in the office. I mean, you know, he knocks his Yoo-hoo over pretty much every day, so I would imagine it was not an easy cleaning job.
Yoo-hoo?
I know. Lisa, how do you get Slurpee stains out?
You're actually going to talk? He's actually... No,
put them on. Well, according to Bruce, your wife and children came in and cleaned your office up yesterday? You can't do that for yourself?
Listen,
appalling.
I did it.
Yeah.
They just came in to visit me.
That's not the story that I was just told a few seconds ago. That they were in here cleaning your office. That your poor little children were scrubbing away and their eyes
were red-rimmed
from ammonia fumes.
Now we're embellishing.
Well, your sources are wrong. You should go to the source and get it right.
I heard that your wife was overcome with end dust fumes while she was doing what should be your work. Is that the way you are around the house, too?
Lisa, you're vacuuming right in front of the television. Johnny Damon is up. Could you move a little to the right?
All right,
Johnny.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a show to do. We can't be discussing the Sal Haney house.
We can't be,
that's their private business anyway.
We'll hear about this later.
So, I brought this up a few days ago, and I know that a number of people thought, "Oh, there he is with one of his crackpot ideas." And
which one?
The other day when I brought up Helmecki's Landing. Now, Helmecki's Landing is what we're referring to.
I thought we had that all straightened out. I thought the budget director called up and explained it in impeccable terms.
Budget director who's scrambling for a new job? That budget director?
All right.
Mark,
so maybe the
resume Orion? So, that budget director?
So maybe the commitment isn't, they're like, maybe you'd hope.
Yeah, I love how, nobody wants that Diane Sawyer job, Nobody wants to be taking a walk on the beach with Roland in his wingtips at the end of this whole fiasco. Nobody wants to be the last rat off the Titanic this time. They're all got their life jackets on.
Anyway.
Yes. It is true that the budget director, Mark, I am desperate for new employment, Ryan. Actually, in fairness to Mark Ryan, he's always been looking for a job. Ever since I've even known who Mark Ryan was, he's always looking for a new job or threatening to leave. I mean, I think he was going to go to UTC. He was going to take George David's job a few years ago. No, it wasn't that. But, he's always been threatening to leave and take a job in the private sector, and he's always brandishing these enormous salaries that he's been offered. So, and it really, in a Ryan-esque turn, I would have to say that this has been in the works for a long time, which is sort of what he said. Well, we have to back up. Earlier this week, at a meeting at the lovely AquaTurf in Southington, a meeting, my account of which is now being disputed by the newsroom quizzling Chris Francis, but that's a whole other story. Fifth column Francis. Anyway, the...
Man, everybody's getting it today. It's only 15 minutes into the show.
So there's this meeting at the Aqua Turf, and Roland gets up, and according to the Bristol Press, he not only announced that there were $45 million about to come sailing at Bridgeport for the revitalization of the Bridgeport at Bristol, for the revitalization of downtown Bristol, but that it would come in over three years, $15 million a year. And according to the Bristol Press, and this is the part that Chris Francis disputes, but according to the Bristol Press, Governor Roland specifically pointed out from up there that if there were another governor in office this following two, he could only guarantee the $15 million right now. If there were another governor in office in the subsequent years, they would have to get the $15 million from him.
Or her.
Well, that's a pretty, I mean, if in fact the Bristol Press account of this is accurate, that's a pretty naked statement. I mean, the whole thing is, as we will see in just a second, a pretty naked attempt to influence a certain member of the House Select Committee. But to say to the audience, I mean, if it's really true that he said to the audience, well, if I'm not here next year or the year after that, you'll just be trying to get your $15 million from somebody else. Well, he's scheduled to be there. I mean, the only way he's not going to be there is if he gets impeached or if he resigns. So to bring that up, I mean, it's not something governors ordinarily bring up. I might not be here next year. And so he's clearly sort of threatening them with the, you know, possibility that the gravy train would dry up if he weren't around. And the significance of all this is that Bill Hanzy, who's a Republican from Plymouth, has part of Bristol in his district. So the people that he was talking to, the Central Connecticut Chamber of Commerce, the people who are sitting there just salivating all over their AquaTurf fruit cups at the idea of getting $45 million into Bristol, which, although it really is our garden spot, there's no question about that, it could use a little bit of sprucing up in the downtown area. Well, if you're going to do that, that's not helpful.
I'm sorry.
So they're sitting there looking, oh my God, we're getting $45 million. Unless, of course, Dopey Boy over here impeaches Governor Roland. So Hamzy, who's on the select committee, and he has actually, in subsequent interviews, said that he doesn't like being put in that spot. And Arthur O'Neill, who's the Republican co-chairman of the House Select Committee, has now said that that he's troubled by this whole $45 million proposal and needs to be looked at more closely, that scrutiny is imperative given the environment in which we're operating. They need to look at what's going on. Why suddenly Bristol gets $45 million. And in fact, O'Neill is asking the same question. First of all, he wants to know whether it is a done deal or if it actually requires an annual authorization. Well, first of all, if I understood the comments of Mark, get me out of here, Ryan, when he called our show the other day, it first of all requires, I mean, it's not a done deal at all. It requires authorization by the Bond Commission. Now, the Bond Commission has about as much mind of its own as, you know, the people in the Matrix. I mean, it's one of the Borg or something. I mean, it pretty much does whatever Roland tells it to. But, I mean, it needs an up or down vote by the Bond Commission, which is to say that it doesn't really represent money that's already allocated or anything like that. It's money that would have to be voted out of the overall bonding package. There's a cap on bonding, so, you know, somebody else would not get this money. But, I mean, that's a whole separate issue. But then he also, the other question is, does it have to be re-upped every year? In other words, is it the case that if the governor's gone, will they continue to get the money, or will somebody have to reauthorize it every year? He wants to know about that, too. And so anyway, so there's all of that, and the Journal Inquirer now has a bunch of stories about this, and O'Neill wants to know a little bit more about this package and how it gets to be what it is. Well, anyway, on the heels of this, and this is nowhere near as dramatic, and in fact, this may just be almost an unlucky coincidence for the governor, but today, Dean, I'm running for the lifeboat to Pagani, announced that that would be the governor's chief of staff. And Dean, I'm yanking on the ripcord Pagani. He confirmed, although I guess he didn't really know that it was coming, but he confirmed that a $300,000 housing grant has gone to the fine city of Windsor. which is the home base of one Ruth C. Farback, who, oddly enough, is one of the other five. Well, there's a total of five Republicans. I'm assuming that no Democrat can be influenced in this way simply because, I mean, it just...
Are you sure about that?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but, I mean, I'm just for the sake of clarity, I mean, what I'm guessing that they're doing here, if in fact it's, you know, I mean, this is pretty, the Bristol thing is pretty naked. It's pretty obvious what they're doing. Now, if they're doing something similar with Ruth Farback, who's also a Republican, she's one of the five Republicans on the House Select Committee, what they might be looking for is a 5-5 vote. I don't even know what happens at a 5-5 vote. But if, you know, they could get five Republicans to vote against impeachment, first of all, they managed to at least portray the process as completely political, which is works tremendous. I don't know how the tie gets broken or what happens then, but that would be great for them. You know, if they could even turn three or four Republican votes, they could then at that point say, well, this is pretty much a political process. I mean, you know, there isn't a lot of Republican will to do this. But anyway, suddenly she's got $300,000 flowing into her town. But as I say, it may be an unlucky coincidence because it does look... well, I don't know. We can talk a little bit more about this.
She's only getting $300,000. Bristol's getting $45 million.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, you see, Bristol had something in the pipeline. They'd done some preliminary work on this. I mean, they were trying to get this money. Although, interestingly, according to one of the articles that I read today, I know we need to go to break, but this is interesting. According to Arthur O'Neill, Bristol had from what he can figure out anyway, Bristol had long ago applied for this state aid, for the sparkling jewel that is downtown Bristol. But they had asked for $36 million.
You can't.
And in a move that Arthur O'Neill characterized as somewhat unusual, Roland was asking them if we'd be willing to settle for $45 million instead, whether that would be okay.
Who said the baseball season be?
It is true that. Just to wrap up this whole thing about this pork that they're. Governor Roland is flinging out onto the waters to go to save his hiney.
Who's next? You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to think who they... Well, Dolly Powers, she's on there, and she's like from Greenwich or something, so I don't know. Probably just, you know, shutting down, you know...
Keeping the Powerball people
yeah,
out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Keeping some kind of...
low life.
A bit of new visa system probably is what they're looking for as opposed to a monorail or something. But really, if one of these... five Republican representatives is a representative of your town, you should request a monorail if you've always wanted one anyway. Whatever it is you want, believe me, Santa's bag is open at the moment.
We got anybody in Litchfield County on that thing? Because I kind of like to have a monorail.
Yeah, all right. No, I don't think, off the top of my head, I can't think of the other two people. Well, one of them is Arthur O'Neill, and he's not taking nothing from nobody. He's from Southbury, which is not too far away, but he's not taking nothing from nobody. He's not liking this very much, so we're down. There's just one more that I can't think who it is or where that person would be from. But anyway, I don't know how serious the Windsor thing. The Bristol thing is just a naked attempt for him to save himself. And it is sort of interesting. They did put out press about this before the actual bond approval of the Windsor thing, which is slightly unusual. I don't know. I don't know whether that one's the same kind of thing or not. We should mention also, coming up in the next segment here, we're going to talk to the coolest man in Connecticut, Gorman Bouchard, about the last night's Apprentice finale. Gorman, although he's the coolest person in Connecticut, he also watches a lot of junk television.
And this will be the last we'll hear of the Apprentice.
The last we'll hear about the Apprentice will come the fall.
We have some kind of written statement on that in blood?
Well, it's not clear because Osama bin Laden, in that tape that he released yesterday, he indicated that he might be adding Omarosa to his staff. So if that happens, well, we'd have to discuss that, I would think. And then later on, we're going to have to talk to Diana Farrell from Westport. She's running against Chris Shays. We already talked to her once, but we're supposed to go.
Once is never enough.
Well, basically, the problem is that Chris Shays is people, they just never call us. They don't return calls. They're too busy. So, you know what? I mean, Diana Farrell will just get on the air until that changes.
Hello, America. I'm Jeff Anderson, and I'm here to...
And joining us now is our own Mr. Positive, the coolest man in Connecticut, filmmaker and novelist Gorman Bouchard.
Good afternoon, guys.
Who, despite being the coolest person in Connecticut, watches a certain amount of junk television.
Yeah, we all need our guilty pleasures. Yeah. I mean, The Apprentice is good. It's no Survivor, but, you know, it's still quite good.
And but for some reason or other, The Apprentice really sort of took hold. And I mean, it really acquired this kind of gigantic following of people who were just obsessing about it. And
we all need jobs. I think it's because, you know, jobs are like one of those, like, it's the holy grail. You know, it's a Republican administration. We need these jobs. And I think it's like nice to, like, watch people dream, you know?
You know, actually, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about this, but a show where the prize is a job, at a time where joblessness and job creation are sort of, you know, sources of great anxiety. And
exactly.
And if you get that job and you're making a lot of money, you're looked on more favorably by the Bush administration.
That's true. I mean, the $250,000 salary that Bill, whatever his name is going to be paid, puts them probably up there in one of those, you know, really cushy Bush administration tax brackets where tax policy is pretty much designed to benefit you.
At least for the next 9 months.
Yeah.
And that'll all change.
And why do you think that, I mean, I actually watched a fair amount of The Apprentice, although every time I watched it, I thought, why am I watching this? And I didn't like Bill, and I don't know why he won.
I don't either. I would have hired Amy, personally.
Mm.
If nothing else, just to look at.
Yeah.
Which is enough of a reason, probably. No,
well, for the Donald to do this, yeah.
Amy had a much better head on her shoulders. Any of these shows, like, why does someone win? I think it's just a lot of luck of the draw. I mean, who ends up getting which challenge has an awful lot to do with it. Not having Omarosa on your team, there's just any number of reasons.
Well, that was sort of interesting, too, because at the end, the final challenge for each of these guys, one of them had to sort of, Kwame had to organize a Jessica Simpson concert.
Right.
And Bill had to organize a charity golf tournament at Briarcliff. And I actually, or Briarwood, or whatever it's called.
I have no idea. It's golf.
Yeah, it's golf, yeah. Exactly. My attitude, exactly.
Couple of golf fans there.
Yeah. And I thought Bill's job was actually harder. I mean, a golf tournament, I would think it would just be hard. I mean, with Jessica Simpson, you just have to get Jessica Simpson out there on stage and everybody else into their seats.
Yeah.
It just seems like an easier thing to do.
I think it comes down to people just don't pay attention. I mean, after everything that had come before it, I mean, really, Kwame should have, like, taken Omarosa, sat her down, and say, just sit here, don't move for the next 3 days. Just don't talk to anyone, don't do anything. Take a long nap.
Yeah,
I would have given her no responsibility. I wouldn't have given her even responsibility to maybe even take a nap. That might have been too much for her to handle.
We'll have somebody else take your naps for you, all right?
Yes. See,
well, you know, Omarosa, I guess most people understand this by now. Omarosa is this stunning African-American woman who just turns out to be a complete psycho. I mean, a real sociopathic, weird, unpleasant person. And, you know, initially when you watch something like this, you think, well, maybe it's the editing, because, you know, you would know this better than I, but you can take a lot of raw footage and edit it together
absolutely.
So that a good person looks like a bad person or a bad person looks like a good person. But after a while, it did become clear that this woman is a psycho.
Yeah. Wouldn't you love to see her and Sam running the company? I mean,
I think they may be running the company I work for sometimes.
But boom, there. You need some, like, sound effects.
There you go. It's the first time I've ever said anything
funny.
It's
a fun guilty pleasure. You know, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm a huge Survivor fan. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think for Mark Burnett is like the genius of reality TV.
Well, I have to steal a line from Jon Stewart, who I think is a genius. Who pointed out the other day that at the end of the Tyco Dennis Kozlowski case, when the mistrial was declared, about six of the jurors went on one of the morning TV shows, like the Today Show or something, and they showed a clip of one of them saying how strange this whole process was of being on the Tyco jury, and the guy said it was kind of like a reality show, and Jon Stewart said it's really come to this, is that people are comparing reality to a reality show.
Yeah, it's funny, though. I'm working with someone right now who was actually cast for a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
But she was very literally cast in a very specific role. Anytime she wanted anything else, she was told she couldn't, that she was cast as this.
Yeah.
And she eventually just said, but this is not reality, and she just quit.
Right.
Before, you know, they even started filming. And in a few of the people I've talked with that have been in on these shows or very close to getting on these shows, you seem to find the exact same, you know, the same thing that's going on. It's like, it's reality, but what reality they want you to see.
Yeah, and
being tweaked.
The people who are chosen seem to be pretty heavily not exactly focus grouped before they get there, but there's a, I mean, we know somebody connected with our show who was being looked at for a reality show at one point, and mm-hmm. I don't know, she wasn't tall enough or something. There was like some kind of height requirement. I can't remember. Some weird thing like that. It was like, what are you talking about? So,
Maybe there were rides involved.
It could be. There may well have been. I didn't give that any thought, actually.
Yeah.
And the other thing that, I mean, you know, you said Amy. Amy was, for the people who didn't watch, this kind of truly stunning woman who also seemed to do very well at most of the challenges. And she was kind of a suck-up. That's the only thing I didn't really like about her. But Mr. Trump this and Mr. She was still doing it last night. And I guess there's a report in the New York Post that Trump did offer her a job, you know, after the whole thing was over.
While she might have been a suck-up, I thought she was like, I mean, she would have been the person that I would have trusted to get everything done.
Yeah.
I mean, even like last night when she said to Bill, it's like, you don't have me again. It's done.
Yeah.
And that was just it. She would get her job done. And that's, what more do you want from someone you hire?
Yeah.
They do a good job, they get it done. You know, that's the basis of, you know, work, I think. You know?
Yeah.
It's funny when you mention stunning. Were there really many girls on that show that you couldn't apply that term to?
No, but you know, you have to assume Trump. Look at Trump's own personal history. He's not going to hire some woman who's not a hottie.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I even thought there was this the youngest girl on the show, who was 21, who was this adorable little brunette. I mean, you know, I kept rooting for her because she was just at least like eye candy, you know.
Yeah. I actually thought, I mean, I don't know whether he was the best candidate or not, but I had assumed that Troy was going to win because this guy Troy McClain from Idaho, he just was so much, he really was who Trump thinks he is anyway, maybe. I was astonished that when Trump fired him.
I think, though, that's a lot of times that's what you don't look for when you're hiring someone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, you know, am I going to hire the second coolest person in Connecticut to work for me? This is why you can never work for me. Sorry.
My dream is shattered. But Mr. Bouchard, I did so well on the other challenges. Mr. Bouchard, I have a big poster of you up in my room, Mr. Bouchard.
Yeah, we don't need to know that.
Right, okay.
You're scaring Bruce.
Very much so.
All right. So now that The Apprentice is over, what is there to look for? Well, there's still some American Idol to go.
I guess if you really can look forward to that. I mean, American Idol, I don't know if you watch it. But
I do.
There's one girl who, and you know, her name is freaking, she's the one with the weird name. Fantasia.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like Amateur Hour the other night, and then Fantasia sings.
Fantasia sang Summertime the other night, as well as you can sing Summertime. That's as well as a person, I mean, that's as well as Dinah Washington could sing Summertime.
It doesn't, I was like, I kept thinking, I'm hearing like the ghost of Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just spectacular. I mean, to me, it's like, the other people aren't even singers. There's no competition. I mean, just give her the damn thing. Now, I would buy her CD, and believe me, I believe it or not, I have not rushed out and bought any of the other CDs that came out of American Idol. I don't own one of them. I know.
How about William Hung? Do you have his CD?
No, I do. I don't. Yeah.
I should buy William Hung's CD just to use on the show. I mean, it's just irritating enough to become bumper music for us. But when I've been watching American Idol lately, what I've been thinking is if some other extraterrestrial race came to our planet and just sort of tuned into American Idol, right? They would conclude that there was this fabulously talented, spirited, vibrant bunch of people called African Americans, and then this, like, you know, grotesquely misshapen, untalented group of other people called Caucasians who were clearly in danger of dying out at any moment just from helplessness.
Are you like hinting at like that maybe like JPL really wasn't a great dancer?
No, that guy, you mean that Hobbit? The kid who was the Hobbit?
The guy who looked like
a Hobbit.
The short guy who was like always doing Elvis songs.
Yeah, he looked like the fifth Hobbit. He looked like the Hobbit that didn't go on the trip with the other Hobbits.
I don't know. I was amused by him. In fact, did you see Quentin Tarantino the other night?
I did.
I thought Tarantino made the best guest host ever.
He was pretty good. Are you going to see Kill Bill this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you like?
I Kill Bill Volume 1. I mean, he set out to make a kung fu film with hot chicks. That's what it is, and it was just completely entertaining.
Well, okay. I mean, I saw Kill Bill Volume 1, and I understand these films have. That film has its defenders, and it gets great reviews and stuff like that. And I guess the new film is getting. And I know I have a 14-year-old boy. What choice do I have?
I mean, come on. In Kill Bill Volume 1,
yeah.
the fight scene between Go-Go, the girl in a Catholic high school uniform,
yeah.
the little and Uma was the all-time great fight scene. I mean, that was not only was it like a great fight scene, it was the hottest thing I've seen on film in like years.
Okay.
Maybe I have problems that way.
Maybe I have some kind of hormone deficiency where I don't get these things.
Well, there you go.
I get more excited about Troy than I do about Amy. Maybe there's something wrong with me.
It could very well be, you know. Yeah. I'm really not hiring you now.
Well, you don't have any openings anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, well, know what? Can I pitch something?
Yes, pitch something.
We actually are starting a film company in New Haven to do 1 to 2 independent feature films on Mini TV every year.
What's it called?
We're shooting our first one this summer. The film company is called What Were We Thinking Films, which is, I think, what, you know, 5 years from now, we'll probably look back on the title and say it was very apropos.
Yeah.
And we actually have a great site if someone wants to, you know, look up any information on what we're doing, invest, anything.
Yeah.
It's just filmnewhaven.com.
Filmnewhaven.com. Gorman Bichard, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Part of my past, I was actually trying to put behind.
Oh, you got those gigantic seals. This is Connecticut's biggest seals and cross collection, isn't it?
Did you still have it? No, I don't actually.
No.
But I did at one point have a lot of seals.
Well, a lot of people had a lot of seals and cross records. I mean, I probably had a couple.
Couple
of seals and cross records, but see, I used to play that crap all the time. So after a while,
I converted to Baha'i for a while too.
Yeah, it just gets to your head, and you just don't want it around.
All right, we've got a Rick from West Hartford here who wants to call about
the apprentice again.
Yeah.
Again? Rick?
Well, it's an interesting topic.
Rick, you're going to have
to.
As you were then. Coming up, we have Diana Farrell who's running against Chris Shays down there in Fairfield County for a brief appearance, which we have scheduled not so much out of interest about what Selectman Farrell has to say, but just to piss off the Chris Shays people because they're uncooperative. And so we're just going to keep putting his opponent on the air. Until we get a little rhythm out of them.
Matters not what the motivation is. It's, you know, as long as it makes us happy.
And then coming up a little bit later, you want to talk about this lottery ticket thing, and there's a pretty amusing profile of Theresa Hines in the Cindy Adams column in today's New York Post. It has some real gems in it, some real Theresa, including her 3 rules for living. Stay strong, even if you gain weight. Keep a sense of humor. And marry a husband with your first husband's same first name, so if you yell out his name during sex, it won't matter. No, that really wasn't the last one. The last one was be humble.
It sounded like it was kind of made up.
I think
don't release your tax return either. Remember that.
Don't release your tax return. That's right. All right, we're back. I believe that we're about to talk to Diane Farrell, who's running against Chris Shays, but we don't have her yet, so... very quickly, maybe I should mention a little bit about this fascinating profile of Therese Hines Carey, who, among other things, she shows up at Cindy Adams' apartment. She's I don't know what time of day it is. It's in the afternoon, I guess. She's been up since 6, going nonstop, was heading to a Newsweek shoot. It was raining. And Cindy Adams writes, a nifty lady who can go with the flow. She sat down at my dressing table, grabbed my hairbrush, blow dryer, roller, and comb, and then helped herself to my powder, blusher, and brushes. After posing for the photographer, it was into my kitchen for chicken soup and conversation. But this is that's how you like get pink eye. You know, you don't want like people who've been out on the campaign trail use your makeup. That's how you wind up with conjunctivitis. It's not a good thing. And it says that she's gained 10 pounds because she eats such crap while she's on that campaign trail. But basically, Rush pointed this out today. And to my mind, this is sort of speaks well of her instead of. I mean, Rush wants to have it both ways because he always characterized Hillary Rodham Clinton as this kind of maniacally, aggressively ambitious person who was ambitious for her husband in 1992 and subsequently ambitious for herself. And, you know, and yet he was poking away at Theresa Hines Carey today for the opposite, that she basically never, she says, the last thing she says in the interview is, what people don't know is that I'm basically shy. I never wanted to do this. It all seems so bizarre. And Rush was sort of crowing today, saying, I knew it. Well, I mean, who really would want to do this? And, I mean, I think Theresa Hines Carey is one of the weirdest people I've ever seen in American politics, but not because of that. Anyway, we'll have to discuss this at greater length later, because joining us now is Diane Farrell. She's a
select woman from Westport. She's running against Chris Shays in the...
For the future. He has 355,000 cash on hand, and we have 330.
If somebody wanted to give you money now, is there a website or something like that?
Oh, yeah, there's a website, and we'd love to have people.
Betcha. I never do this. I'm only doing this to piss off Chris Shays. I want you to know that, all right?
Okay.
All right, what's your website address?
It's a free country, and it's your call.
Right.
Web address is very easy, Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, for Congress.com.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us, Diane Carroll.
All right. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather at long last.
I intend to. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. A better-looking lawn begins this weekend with Scott's four-step program from Katz Ace Hardware in Glastonbury. They sell more Scott's Lawn Pro four-step than anybody else in New England because their staff is trained directly by Scott's company as lawn care professionals. So if you have lawn problems such as weeds, crabgrass, lawn fungus, moles, or grubs, they have your solutions. Dick, the lawn doctor, will help you detect and correct what's troubling your lawn. So get in there for their expert knowledge and advice. They will guarantee you a healthier looking lawn. And they got some neat stuff you can rent too. For instance, they got the toilet auger. They got the carpet blower. You get a backhoe. You can get a little bobcat bulldozer kind of thing.
Don't try to use the toilet auger and the carpet blower at the same time.
They've got, here it is. I hadn't told you about this one yet. Just saw this. You can rent a nut setter.
A nut setter?
A nut setter.
I can't comment on this. I can't say another word.
There's a whole list of stuff here.
Yeah.
Go crazy. Having a good time. Aerators, thatchers, cedars, whatever you need. After 85 years in business, they know what they're doing. So stop by this weekend. Get your nut setter or your toilet auger or your carpet blower or whatever you need.
You know, one day when I was growing up, my father brought me and my brothers all into the kitchen. He said, boys, I'm going to show you now how to set your nuts.
Stop by and get the Scott's Forestry. Scott's Forestry.
After that, we never needed to rent a nut setter. Before.
At Katz Ace Hardware, Main Street, Glastonbury.
Seasonal allergies are in...
Although, Buddy did have a good idea on the air today about commercials and how we have too many of them. We should charge more for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens.
Yeah.
If you have too many when you get in a position like that,
the driver says they're killing us.
Up the...
It's like kudzu. It's choking us right now. But,
That's the name of that stuff.
Yeah, kudzu.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's choking us right now. So Buddy was saying, you know, the other thing is, I'm considering banning Ron from Canton from this show. And I wouldn't have done that.
He hasn't called in weeks.
He's like he's one of these people. He's like a cryonically frozen, severed head.
Of course, now he's not going to call, is he?
Sitting in saline solution. And he knows like the names of, he must have like WTICAM baseball cards or something. And he knows like, you know, what schools the producers went to and stuff like that. It was just really a bad sign. He has more interest in the people who work here than I do by far.
Yeah, but let's be honest.
I understand that I have
anything
almost
about
no
zero
interest in the people.
Would be, yeah,
but then he's like, why Bobby has been helping produce the Buddy Weissman show this week, while Mikey C has been at the Institute of Living after having to work for Buddy all this time, you know. And so, like, Ron calls up and says and casts asparagus on us, and then Buddy starts casting asparagus on us, and pretty soon everybody's casting asparagus on us.
It's a role we've become rather accustomed to.
But Ron started it. Ron, who we actually used to let on the air, and he talked, I know we have to go, but he talked for 5 minutes on the Buddy show today, and I swear to God, he sounded like he just dropped acid. I mean, he made no sense whatsoever for 5 minutes. Oh, right, we're back.
And
we've got a lot of things to talk about here, but including you wanted to maybe lead us through a discussion of this whole lottery question.
Yeah.
And we
have calls right now.
We also have the governor, so.
So why don't we do that first?
Okay.
Albert in Bristol, hi.
How you doing?
Good.
He's the one that the state representative from Bristol.
Yeah.
He's the one that's spearheading this thing.
So I've been told. Well, so you don't favor the expenditure of $45 million worth of state money upon the downtown area of Bristol. How come you don't want that?
Well, it's an old mall, and they want to buy the whole mall, and they want to put in this swimming pool, which we've already got three in Bristol. I don't know why we need another one.
Because it's pork. It's pork, don't you understand? It's pork. You're supposed to want your pork. Eat your pork.
No. The Democrats, they spend money like crazy in Bristol. They're buying all these properties and tearing down buildings.
This is a Republican initiative.
Things they shouldn't be doing, you know?
But this is the governor. This is your Republican governor coming in there waving $45 million under your nose.
I know. That's been going on for 12, 15 years.
Well, if it's...
The man has been after
if it's been going on for 12 to 15 years, and suddenly when it, you know, it can create a little space between him and impeachment, it's suddenly there. That kind of proves my point about this. If it's been going on for 12 to 15 years.
That's not the case. Somebody before, the governor before Roland was kind of promised the Bristol the money.
Well, people promise the money. Roland's promised everything to everybody, but I mean, and they rarely deliver. They just do that in order to get you to vote for them. But now he's actually waving the money around at you, and the reason is to put some pressure on this guy Bill Hamsey, who's another one of your state reps, because he's on the House Select Committee. That's why that's happening.
That's not the reason why.
Oh, it absolutely is the reason why. It is the reason why. Just shut up and eat your pork, all right? It's the other white meat. I guess I told him.
Yeah, I guess you did. Here's Jerry.
Wait, what a forehead he is anyway. They're giving him $45 million and all he does is whine about it.
He's trying to be fiscally responsible.
Yes, he is. I guess he's a good fellow, actually. I probably shouldn't have spoken so harshly to him.
Jerry?
Hello?
Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I was just wondering, did they have an apprenticeship for Governor and John Rowland won?
Well, our idea yesterday was that they should do an apprentice show about John Rowland, but the prize would be you get to leave, you know? Like,
maybe
you win.
Maybe they're already doing it because a couple of contestants.
But, yeah, the goal of the game would be to get out. Like, you know, Dean Pagani and Mark Ryan and David Boomer. And you just have it, Michelle Sullivan. You have them all in a room, Larry Cohen. You have them all in a room, and sort of one by one they'd be allowed to leave. Well, anyway, that was our idea. And we can't hear you anymore.
Right.
So no. Tell us about this lottery case.
Well, this lottery case has been around since 1995.
What was my position on it last time?
I don't remember what it was.
Yeah. What's your position on it?
I think this guy has no business getting this money.
What I think, too. That's exactly what I think. Anyway, explain it to me.
He's a guy from Hamden. His name is Clarence Jackson. He had the winning ticket for a drawing in 1995. He had a year to turn the ticket in. A couple of days after the deadline ran out, he discovers the ticket, turns it in, and expects to get the money.
Yeah.
He had a year to turn it in.
The only way that he should be allowed to do it is if his case went before Judge Mangacci.
Oh.
Judge Mangacci would have to give it to him.
That's right, because... Yeah.
Because if you're a judge, you're allowed to miss deadlines by weeks.
Well, see, the Connecticut House voted to give the money to Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there's no money in the appropriations. Nothing's been set aside for it. So they can't give it to him because they don't have any money.
Well, also, the Senate has refused to ever vote on this, right?
I don't think the Senate has voted on it, right?
Yeah, they were so in the past. They were.
But there's no money set aside in this year's state budget.
Well, that doesn't matter because, you know, I don't think there was really any money set aside for Bristol either. Why doesn't Clarence Jackson move to a town that's represented by somebody who's on the House Select Committee, and then maybe he can have his money?
Jackson was 22. He bought the lottery ticket. He said he didn't discover he was a winner until 15 minutes before the ticket was to expire.
Yeah.
And I guess it was a holiday weekend, as I recall, or something, and he couldn't get into the lottery headquarters and turn the thing in. But why, I mean, like that would happen if you and I had one of these?
Well, there is something kind of amazing about, when you think about how hard it is to win the lottery, it's impossible. Everybody, you know, every week you buy these tickets and you look at them and they're not even close and stuff like that. This guy wins and he doesn't. You've got to feel bad.
How do you win? How do you buy a ticket and not look?
Well, I mean, I've done that, it's just, I don't know, but it wouldn't occur to me to look a year later. Just, I wonder if I won that week that I didn't look. You know, I mean, it wouldn't occur to me to do that. I mean, think about what he had to do, too. That means that he had to get his ticket out a year later and then find out what the lottery number was a year ago on a certain day.
So
well,
he
I mean,
must
that's
have
a
known,
lot of trouble to go to.
Either that or he must have known he'd already won, at which point, why is he waiting around until 15 minutes before the deadline to supposedly discover that he won?
Or maybe he had like a, I don't know.
What the hell is the state legislature getting involved in this for anyway?
Well, this is what's called a special act. And these things, actually, there are some legislative sessions in which the special acts are almost the only thing that are even remotely interesting. Because they're sort of, you can propose a law, a special act, about almost anything. Like quite frequently, they do allow people to collect on things or to sue an entity that can't ordinarily be sued or something like that. And they basically create exceptions. I mean, that's one of the things special acts.
Yeah, but think about this. I mean, how many times have we sat here and talked about social agencies that are either being shut down or cut back or whatever?
Yeah.
Yet we can find $5 million to give some guy his lottery ticket because he couldn't remember and had a year to turn it in and didn't turn it in. I mean, that doesn't seem. What kind of a message does that send to people?
Yeah, I'd probably be better to spend that $5.8 million opening some kind of clinic for people to organize their lives in and do stupid things like this.
Right. Or, you know, like maybe a gambling clinic.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. But, I mean,
I don't feel bad for him.
Mm.
Because, I mean, when you have a year to turn something in, that seems like a pretty good amount of time to figure out, you know, whether you won a lottery drawing or not.
Maybe each of the legislators who voted in favor of this bill could just give them $1,000 from their respective PACs. Most of them have their own political action committees. At least you give them a grand. That's enough to get them.
Well, they didn't have any trouble with trying to, what they found, was it Thomas Bozak, a job so
that's
he
right.
could get his, you know,
they could do that.
Benefits.
They could get him one of these jobs that they get for brain-dead ex-legislators and, you know, the kids of lieutenant governors and stuff like that. Get him one of those kinds of jobs where he shows up to some committee room up in the legislative office building and, like, plays with a light switch for 8 hours.
Yeah, but it would take a long time to earn your $5.8 million.
I understand, but
yeah.
He'd have something to do while he's waiting anyway.
Yeah.
And he could be employed productively like so many people are up there. I don't know. I can't see it. I can't see giving him, you know, him the money. And I think it's kind of soft-headed of the House to do this. But on the other hand, they voted in favor of Benghazi, too. They clearly don't think you should ever have to hew to any of the rules that they set up. Too many commercials.
There's a couple. But if we didn't have those, we would be
we're happy to have the commercials.
Unemployed.
Love the commercials. They're really an entertainment form in their own right. Should we talk to this guy here? He wants to talk about your lottery story.
All right. Gary?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good.
In the law, you created one single exception to the law. And by the way, these laws, I mean, they actually pass a law that is usually called, this law is probably called something like, I mean, if the bill were up, the name of the bill is probably something like a special act.